You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the world of the orphans. I know you've all been freshly awakened, but I have my own things to deal with, as we are about to prep a lovely landing.
The Orphans, an original audio drama experience. Episode 1, available May 23rd, exclusively at oneofus.net.
All right, friends, welcome to Inside the Locker. My name is Ramon Ramirez. We're a little thin tonight. Elliot can't make it. I think he's at a concert. He's at a Kesha concert, I believe. Adam is in Europe, literally.
He'll be back someday.
He'll be back one of these days. But he does, you know, he's still coming back. Logan Urie, though, is on the boards. Logan, what's happening?
I'm doing great, man. We're in a new space right now, and it's gonna sound a little prettier, a little less echoey. And,
reporting live from the Daily Dot's new podcast-specific studio den. It's very exciting to be here. And, of course, JC DeLeon is in the building. JC, what's happening, man?
Not a lot, man. How is everyone doing?
You know, I think we're all doing great. we're going to get right to it. Actually, fun fact, Colin Cowherd followed me on Twitter.
What?
No shit.
Very excited about that. If you look at his account, he's not one of those people who follows like 100,000 people.
It was his actual, not his show Twitter?
His actual Twitter.
Nice.
I tweeted at him, he retweeted me, and then followed me because he realized I was A, verified.
I was going to say, that blue check mark helps.
Like a legit. Yeah, because the thing is, when you got the check mark, what actually helps you is if you get tweeted at by someone with a check mark, it lets you know first.
Right.
So
wait, what did you say in your tweet?
You know, he had this really great opening rant. I sincerely believe that Cowherd has just, since he moved to Fox, has just been completely revitalized and has just really gone hard. I mean, he has great rants. He doesn't give a fuck. He has a little bit more freedom. He brings on interesting guests that are little sketchy guys like Tim Donaghy from the NBA. So he just went all in. I was really impressed. And I gave him a shout-out because he had a really nice Penn State rant that I thought he made some great points and I really believed. And so I gave him a little shout-out on Twitter, got the RT, got the follow. Very exciting.
Nice. I kind of feel that way about Bill Simmons, too. Like,
does he follow you?
Well, no, he doesn't follow me, but Brandon Marshall does, of the New York Jets.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Even better.
Yeah. No, Bill Simmons, since he – I guess ESPN let go of him or just didn't renew his contract – He's the man of his own ship now. Even Grantland was sort of his, but he was always under that ESPN corporate umbrella.
Yeah, no, he's free and swinging. No,
yeah, and he's brought almost his entire Grantland staff with him, and all those guys like they have.
Yeah, I can't imagine she's listening, but a former Daily Dot colleague of ours, Molly McHugh, left us. Was at Wired for a little bit and actually just joined the Ringer.
Nice. Yeah, I saw him tweet like he's. He's real good about tweeting the handles of like every staff member. They've got like 50 staff members now.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great venture. I hope they do well, and I hope they get some cool stuff coming. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, it seems great.
All right, we got a lot of playoff hockey to unpack, so we're gonna sit here and talk. We're gonna be talking playoff hockey for about the next 30 to 45 minutes.
I don't want to talk about it because my Stars got eliminated.
Yeah, you guys lost to the Blues.
Yeah, it was an ugly game.
Washington Caps, the team that I don't care about or think about, but but did follow while I lived in Washington D.C. They lost to the Penguins, but I think they like always get high seeds. And
I think that's kind of par for the course for them.
They always get high.
They always get high. They always have high seeds and lose in the playoffs. No, I look. You know, hockey. Logan, can you name the four teams in the Final Four in hockey?
The Red Wings. The
no.
Blues. The
Blues for sure.
The Blues.
The Giants. The
the Giants.
Are the Red Wings not there?
The 49ers.
The Washington Generals. That's enough hockey. No, I think it's the Penguins, and I think I got two. We got Penguins, Blues, Sharks.
One of okay.
I do really like hockey, but it's particularly I like Dallas Stars hockey in that you know I kind of lose interest as soon as they're out of the playoffs.
It's a fun sport. It's a great sport. It's just you know if you don't grow up with it. It's hard to have that kind of like affection and interest. In any case, all right. I do want to talk a little bit about Leicester City because that's kind of one of those big, crazy crossover sports things that you probably have heard about if you watch SportsCenter, if you are on Twitter, if you have Facebook friends. every American is friends with at least two or three Anglophiles who are like really into the English Premier League.
Yeah.
And can tell you all about Leicester City.
When I first heard about it, I was at the movie theater, and it was maybe a month or so before they culminated their championship. And a friend of mine who is South American, but is obviously into soccer because he's from South America, he's like, you do a sports podcast, don't you? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, you should look into this story. They're completely defying every expectation. This is like a movie or something like that. Like, I don't know enough about the situation. So, yeah, enlighten us.
I'm happy to break down. Basically, yeah, it is cinematic and a very incredible accomplishment in a lot of ways. Again, you've seen the story before. Small team gets hot, makes a Cinderella run. The way the English Premier League works, there's basically four tiers of English soccer. And the highest A league is the Premier League. Leicester City's only been in the Premier League like 2 or 3 years in a row. Last year, they were on the relegation bubble. If you finish 18th place, 19th place, or 20th place, in other words, in the bottom three of a 20-team league,
right,
at the end of the season, you get relegated. So they were kind of a relegation team and certainly a relegation candidate beginning the year. Well, they just went and won the whole league. And what makes it doubly impressive is that in the Premier League, and this is one of the bummers about European soccer, is that you have haves and have-nots. And you have teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Manchester United, these giant teams that not only are, you know, there's no revenue sharing agreement. There's no salary cap. So the teams can spend whatever the fuck they want. And to give you an example of how ridiculous the disparity is in talent, there's an Argentine striker named Sergio Agüero for Manchester City, really good player. He makes more money than the starting 11 of all of Leicester City.
Okay.
And
Jesus.
Leicester City won the title. And what made it, you know, if you want to be cynical, which I am a little bit, this was a year where the big clubs were down. Manchester, and we can kind of start from the bottom. Chelsea, the defending champs, fired their coach midseason. It happens in sports, right? When you have a team full of stars over 30 and they just get old quick, you know?
Yeah.
So Chelsea was out of it pretty early on. Manchester United has a lame duck coach, a lot of talent that hasn't worked out. So you kind of didn't figure they were gonna be in there. Manchester City announced in January, and the league ended in May this month, announced in January that next season they're going to fire, they're going to bring in a different coach. So again, a lame duck coach all season. Arsenal, one of those teams that is perennially finishing second place. I think they finished second place like three out of the last 4 years because they have a really good team that just isn't quite good enough, and it's kind of stuck to the team that they have. And again, in sports, you know those teams. You know those teams that are pretty good, probably aren't going to win a championship. Yeah. You know, and then my team, Tottenham Hotspur, team that I follow pretty closely, youngest starting team in the league, best goal differential in the league, exciting future. They finished in third place. A lot of good stuff there. But ultimately, in the Premier League, you win, you get 3 points. You tie, you get 1 point. You lose, you get zero. So it's a point race. And when you have a very young team, you don't close out. And what Leicester City could do, it was a defensive team that wore you out, very disciplined, good old-fashioned English soccer. And they won, you know, when you got to February. By February, when the big clubs really started getting serious, Leicester went on the run where they won like 6 out of 7 weeks, 1-0. And they were just winning these like short 1-0 games. And next thing you know, they had way more points than anybody. So it was just hard to catch them.
Yeah.
So it is pretty miraculous that a small club could do that. But again, they were certainly – and Liverpool. We didn't even mention Liverpool. Again, another team. They fired their coach, Brandon Rodgers, midseason, hired this guy, Jurgen Klopp, from the Bundesliga, and then went on a – and the other thing is in the Premier League, what's weird about soccer in Europe is that you're worrying about different things all at once. So you can be in the Premier League,
mm-hmm.
and then every year there's the FA Cup, which is kind of like the March Madness tournament. It's just a one-and-done knockout tournament. So you got the FA Cup that you worry about. And if you're one of the teams that had a good year last year, you're in the Champions League. For those that don't know, all of the European leagues send 1 to 4 teams to the Champions League the following year. So if you finish in the top four this year, next year you get to play in the Champions League, which means that theoretically it could be March. You're worrying about the Premier League, the FA Cup, and then traveling to Eastern Europe midweek to play a Champions League game against a German powerhouse.
Yeah.
So again, Leicester didn't have to worry about any of that, but the Premier League, Arsenal, Man City, and Chelsea had a lot of Champions League soccer this spring. So when it became clear that they weren't contenders for the title, that's where their focus kind of went.
So if with the playoff structure, it sounds wildly different than anything in the U.S., but if you could compare this story to any famous sports movie, kind of what would you – sounds a little bit to me like – Major League, Cleveland Indians had a purposefully low payroll so that they could lose every game for the purpose of moving it to another city.
That's a perfect example. Yeah, it's Major League. Not so much Major League 2 because there were expectations in Major League 2. In Major League 1, you're right. For those that don't know, the whole gist of the movie was they wanted to slash the team and cut the payroll so they could have a cheap team that they could then move to.
Doing it on purpose may not have been Leicester City, but yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like with the whole the idea of is it relegation?
Yeah, relegation. But you know, that's the other thing is it was kind of a bummer that it was a two-horse race for about the last month. It was Leicester City and Tottenham. And at a certain point, it became clear that if Tottenham had any chance of winning the title, they'd have to keep pace, right? Leicester would win a game. Tottenham would be forced with, you either win or if you tie, you can't mathematically catch up. And so and this is what drives me crazy about English soccer, because it's not like this in a lot of other soccer leagues in the world. In fact, most of them is the idea that, okay, there's three games left to go in the regular season, but we already have a champion. But Leicester already won the title. So when Leicester won the title, it happened on a Monday after Leicester had played, and Tottenham was up 2-0 and wound up tying 2-2.
Yeah.
And as soon as the tie happened, Leicester was celebrating the title, and they didn't even play.
They were like celebrating in their own apartment.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was listening to. Russillo and Cannell on ESPN Radio, and Danny Cannell sort of famously is a little bit of a soccer troll, and he didn't kind of understand the concept of how they had clinched the championship while not really doing anything, and then there were still games to play. But, I mean, like I said, the playoff structure is wildly different.
There's no playoffs, and so it's frustrating. Now, there are you got the FA Cup, which is a great knockout tournament, Champions League, which is a great playoff tournament, Europa League. So if you finish, fifth and sixth, you go to the Europa League, which is kind of like the NIT, but it still kind of matters. So it's fun. It's good stuff.
So going to those leagues, is that what relegation is?
Relegation is if you finish again in the bottom three, this is just within England.
Yeah.
So you go, it's weird. It's like there's League 2, which is the bottom, League 1, which is third from the bottom, the Championship, which is like the second best league, and then the Premier League. So you go from the Premier League to the Championship.
Okay.
And the only way to get in is to do well in the Championship next year, and then you could be theoretically back. So this year,
the Championship and your league to keep moving up. And then,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So we are going to be saying now, and that was actually part of the big, kind of a big story. What I thought was a much more impressive story was a team called Bournemouth that has a stadium that seats 10,000 people. Started from the bottom, from League 2, got up to League 1, got up to the Championship, got into the Premier League this year, and miraculously did not get relegated. And actually some pretty big clubs got relegated. Aston Villa.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, Aston Villa got relegated. They're a Premier League, regulars. Norwich City feels like they're in and out of the Premier League pretty regularly, so not a huge surprise. And this is a big one. This is a proud club. This is a club that actually has fans, sponsored by one of our favorite beers, Newcastle. Got relegated. By the hair on their chinny chin chin, relegated. In Sunderland, a team that Americans who follow U.S. soccer and like Jozy Altidore, although he's not on the team anymore, but that's kind of why Sunderland was on your radar for a while. They barely avoided relegation. So,
well, I'm curious, like as a fan, like what do you do if your favorite team gets relegated? It feels like it's almost like if you're a Yankees fan and all of a sudden they get sent down to AAA,
or sent down to the minors. Yeah, I mean that is what it is, and that's frustrating. And I think that's why it's. If Tottenham ever got relegated, how am I ever going to watch a Tottenham game? You're going to need some deep streams, some deep, satellite channels.
Yeah.
I was going to say, are those the consequences? Like, it's harder to
Yeah, and also, it's the money. The thing about the Premier League, Aston Villa this year made more money than Barcelona on TV revenue because the Premier League is where it's at. Every country in the world is watching the Premier League.
It's broadcast on NBC here in the U.S.
Yeah, And if you're, I mean, you know, you go to a Manchester United game, you know, I don't like Man United, but what is kind of interesting about them is that every time you go to a Man United home game, you have people from South Asia, people from the Philippines, from India, and it's their trip of a lifetime. So they always have a great crowd.
And that's
what's neat about it. I really do. It's a great league. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's a fun sport, fast pace. It's an all-star for people that watch like the World Cup, like all the great World Cup international soccer players are on there. So it's a lot of fun. And it is incredible that a team like Leicester and a team that a lot of people in England, you know, because if you're English, there is this level of people who are like, you know, I've been a fan of Everton since the fucking 1960s. I grew up with Everton, and now people in Buffalo, New York are writing me about Everton. Like, who are you? This is my team. This is my city. You don't even know where Everton is. There's this adage, do you want to confuse a Manchester United fan? Show them a map of Manchester, right? But also, you know, and that argument is kind of BS because it's like the NBA in China where, hey, it's awesome that all these people are into it. It's a lot of fun. Still, Leicester City is one of those teams that people had an affection for because they were like an old school 1980s English team with a bunch of English players, cheap English players, kind of dodgy looking, and pulled it off. So,
the sense that I had gotten was that people, as it grew bigger and bigger, and I didn't look into it much, but as I would occasionally look into it, it seemed like they were gathering support. And,
yeah. Because it's a good story, and they won the title, and good for them.
I also feel that's a huge thing, but also I feel like, okay, in the bigger picture of things, and this is maybe just a weird shift in conversation, but so what happens, and does it frequently happen, if a team gets relegated down and then gets replaced by a worse team that gets pushed up, you know, like if you have like terrible teams that come back up to replace them, you know, like what if they're just like completely awful and get totally destroyed?
Well, theoretically, I mean, it usually balances out.
Sure.
The difference between like 15th place to like, you know, say 35th place isn't huge.
Sure.
And usually you have teams that are hot that come in. And I guess that's what's kind of what is hard, though, is a lot of times you'll win something and then your players won't be around to participate in or enjoy it. Because a lot of times, if you're winning a title, if you're the general manager of a team, you're going through, like, potentially, if you're one of those, like, League One, League Two teams, and you have a small budget, and you're signing a guy, and then after a while, somebody else is like, hey, you know, it's like the minor leagues, hey, we're going to call this guy up. Like, you're trying to win a title with a rotating cast of parts that are constantly getting either poached or, you know, going down different leagues. So that's, I mean, that's probably the hardest thing to do, is to like manage a team like that with a roster that moves so much during the season.
Sure. I would also argue that it seems like there's a lot more parity in soccer than there is in a lot of other sports.
I think there absolutely can be. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's so many pieces and parts, and there's so many untested players and untested markets. There's a lot of export leagues. You know, you can go to like Belgium. And Belgium leagues aren't really competitive when it comes to playing other European clubs. And the way they stay in business is to develop teams, develop players, and sell them, which is why you're seeing Belgium produce so many talented players. But their league only stays in business because it can sell those talented players.
Sure.
All right, I think that's enough of a nerd out on soccer. Thank you guys for indulging me. One last thing I got to say, though. I got to give a shout out because the real heads out there, the true players right now, are watching fucking Liga MX or watching Copa Libertadores. Are watching the Pumas in the quarterfinals of Copa Libertadores. This, you want a tournament to follow this summer that's actually fun and engaging and actually is familiar in terms of a knockout-style tournament. Well, there's actually quite a few. You got the Copa America, which starts in June. It's the 100th anniversary of the Copa America tournament. This is a tournament that's older than the World Cup. It used to be a South American-only tournament. This year it's happening in the United States, so it's all the South American powers, plus Mexico, plus the United States, all over your favorite stadiums. The month of June, it's going to be awesome. You have Olympic soccer, which is going to be amazing. You have the Euros, which are probably better than the World Cup, expanded for the first time. In France, coming off of the Paris attacks, it's going to be an insane summer for soccer. I can't wait.
So I was going to say, like, if you're giving us that preview, like, I feel like we need a storyline. We need a team to follow. We need like something to like invest us in this.
Or what's Leicester City's next season going to look like and their chances of repeating? Yeah, How often do teams repeat?
Chances of repeat, zero. what you're going to see next year is you're going to see the big dogs spend money, poach players. Now, Leicester, though, if you win a title, you're going to get a lot of money. And if you get a lot of money, you can kind of stay at the table, right? It's like you're playing Monopoly. You got money, you're going to keep playing the game. So they'll be a top 10 team. But can they repeat when Manchester City's about to bring in Pep Guardiola, probably the best coach in Europe, when Arsenal can go spend whatever it wants, when Tottenham has like one more year of players like Dele Alli, who's 19, Eric Dyer, who's in his early 20s, Kerry Kane, who won the Golden Boot, who's like 22. No, I don't think that's going to be realistic. But, hey, they won a title, and that's something that a lot of fucking legendary clubs can't say. So good for Leicester. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Right on.
Alrighty, guys. We do have some other non-soccer items to discuss. And thanks for rolling with us, because I know that this can be a little dry and a little unsexy. JC, your Chicago Cubs are rolling so hard right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of unsexy, now baseball talk.
we're going to get – we got some – now, hold on. We got to drop the tease. We have some NFL draft rundowns. I'm going to give you the five – NFL rookies that you want to draft this year. I mean, you know them, but these are going to be the five best rookies that you got to have. We're going to talk a little playoff hoops, a little NBA lottery. But before we get to that, we just got to check in with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Check in with the Cubbies. I got to ask you, JC, is this the best Cubs team of all time?
I would say, yeah. It's the rate at which they're dominating, and we're now in the Moneyball era, and we're paying more attention to things like run differential. Run differential of the last 15 years has been a huge indicator as to which teams are truly dominant and which teams have a great shot at making it to the World Series. And currently, at 28-11, the Cubs have the best record in the league. They're 14-6 at home, 14-5 on the road. Their run differential is plus 106 runs, which is in first place, obviously. Second place is Boston with plus 57. And so,
man,
the Cubs are almost doubling up second place in run differential. And not only that, their pitching is dominating. Jake Arrieta continues to dominate the way he was last year. I think you could throw this in with his last start, but I know at one point in his last 26 starts in a row going back 2 years, the Cubs are 23-1. The one time the Cubs lost, they were no hit. Which means that in the last 26 starts, the Cubs are undefeated when Jake Arrieta has run support of at least a single hit.
Wow!
Wow!
Yeah. So this is a historically good statistical team, and like you said, it's the Moneyball era, so we can measure all sorts of fields.
Yeah.
I think what every Chicago Cubs fan and even people like myself that would love to see them win.
Oh, we're terrified.
There's no room for error in October, right? There is, oh my God, you got cold for a weekend and it's all over. How is Chicago, and this is a serious question, how can Chicago avoid a cold snap in the fall?
The biggest thing is going to be the pitching. Like, Jake Arrieta has to, even last year in the playoffs, went a little bit cold. He lost one of those games against the Mets, which ended up being their undoing. And he was uncharacteristically bad. The bats have to stay hot. The pitching arms have to stay hot. But they've been dominating, you know, really the way in which they've been pitching. I think the bats have to stay consistent. And I think overall the pitching is good enough. If they can just keep getting the same amount of run support that they've been getting, if they can continue that, they should be fine. But, I mean, every Cubs fan is terrified. Like, they were the Vegas favorites coming into the season. They've stayed the Vegas favorites, and they've been even more dominating than people thought they were going to be. So we are terrified.
Prediction right now.
Oh, God.
No. It's fucking May, so there's no need. But right now, what does your gut say? How far does this team go?
I mean, there's no reason to believe that this team can't win the World Series. Like, run differential has been a huge indicator at, you know, as not just the making it to the World Series, but who the champions should be. And so,
well, all right. So I hate to bring up the Cleveland Indians, but we mentioned them in Major League. It sounds like maybe you and I both saw the Believe Land documentary, 30 for 30 on ESPN.
Yeah.
The 95 Indians got to the World Series. Everybody was so happy after like 40 years of not being good, of not being in a title game, that they were just so happy to be in the World Series.
Yeah.
If the Chicago Cubs get to the World Series, that in itself is so monumental.
Well, you would think so. But, like, the Chicago White Sox just a few years ago won a World Series, and nobody in Chicago gave a shit. Because people only care about the Cubs.
That's not true.
Well, I mean, I don't say nobody, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't as big a deal in the city of Chicago as you would have thought it would
be. Sure, sure.
And so the other big fear, me and my sister were talking about this, the other big fear, because the White Sox are pretty good too. And so I think more devastating than maybe losing in the first or second round would be making it to the World Series against the White Sox and losing the fucking White Sox.
Wow.
That would be devastating.
That would be I can't even imagine. That'd be brutal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll check in with the Cubs. You know, like, we like baseball. I actually am a Washington Nationals fan. You guys swept us last weekend or 2 weeks ago.
There are lots of interesting storylines with baseball. And there was a huge brawl this past weekend that garnered a lot of attention, which, I mean, a lot of people would think is negative attention. But it, you know, it's kind of a lighthearted thing. I think Jose Bautista absolutely deserved to get punched in the face.
Yeah, it was the Rangers versus the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. That was nuts.
Yeah, I think he absolutely deserved to get punched in the face the way he did. But yeah, Bryce Harper is doing really well. Mike Trout continues to be amazing. Got the Cubs. Red Sox are good. White Sox are good.
Mets are still there. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are alive. Whereas usually by now, I feel like there's more teams that are just straight up out of it. I feel like by the time we get to Memorial Day, you can tell who's going to suck this year. I mean, you know, and even the Houston Astros, a team that overachieved last year, that is underachieving this year.
They still got interesting pieces. Correa easily the best young shortstop in the game.
I saw the Astros about a week ago, and it was like a 16, 17 inning game, it was great. It was good to see him complete. It's funny, I say this right now. I literally saw the Houston Astros live a week ago. I don't remember who they played. And I think that stems from being blackout drunk and just crazy stoned. I think that's kind of where that comes from.
Yeah.
And I feel kind of bad about that. But my point there is, ladies, if you're listening, we have this like societal thing where we say, hey, I'm going out with the guys. And that's generally a healthy thing. It's a healthy thing. It can mean a lot of different things. And that's what you got to watch out for, because there's people who are like, hey, I'm going to go out with the guys, and that means I'm going to do a bunch of coke and go to the strip club.
Yeah.
And that's maybe not ideal. Or I'm going to go to a brothel, or I'm going to go lose $10,000 gambling. I'm going to go out with the guys is...
I appreciate if you wouldn't bring up my dirty laundry.
I'm sorry, Logan. I'm sorry. We just have to talk about this. No, my I'm going to go out with the guys is I'm going to just get stupid high and stupid drunk, but in a kind of responsible way that doesn't necessarily hurt anybody or cause any harm. So I'm kind of okay.
No driving, no gambling.
No driving, no gambling, no like, there's this, Houston's one of those cities that really sucks. And actually, Houston's an incredible, diverse melting pot. It's actually one of the least segregated big cities. It really is like an incredible place. But downtown Houston, during the middle of the workday, the difference between Houston and like Chicago or Boston is that like you can... Even in Baltimore, in the middle of the day, you can go to a nice dive bar and get a beer and hang out and relax. In Houston, you really can't. Everything's closed. Hmm. Everything's boarded up. There's only like a couple of shitty restaurants there, and has the worst weather in America. But also, we're sitting there at this crappy ass Mexican grill. I'm not gonna say it. I just dislike this restaurant so much, I don't want to say its name. And we're just sitting there having a meal, and the waiter walks by and talks to his colleague, and he's like, "Man, it smells like weed." And that's when I knew that I was really high. pivoting, we're going to talk about the NBA draft.
I'm curious what the point of that story was.
the point is, going out with the guys can mean so many different things. It can mean – and so you got to watch out for what that means, because there's so many layers to what that means. And I think it's just important to know what that actually means. For me, it means I'm going to go get drunk and stoned with my friends and watch some baseball and just kind of like space out.
And good on you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, that's about the worst thing I'm going to do, and that's you know, honest to God, it's about the worst. Anyway, maybe I'll lose some money if I'm at a casino or something, but not really.
Fair enough.
Not really. Not like I'm going to go lose $1,000. You know, come on. You got to know yourself, fellas. You got to know what your limitations are, and you got to be happy within the parameters. All right, NBA draft lottery this week.
Yeah,
very exciting. Actually, I take that back. Not a particularly. There's no super exciting rookie coming into the draft. As evidenced by the fact that Ben Simmons is not getting crazy Nike money right now.
Right.
Philly's picking number one overall. Dikembe Mutombo called it first. are they going to go Ben Simmons, or are they going to go Brandon Ingram from Duke?
It's interesting. I feel like one of the things that people are speculating is that Boston may not have as much of an interest in that number three pick, so they may offer that number three pick to Philadelphia for Jahlil Okafor. And so if Philadelphia has number one and number three, and number three figures to be Dragan Bender, a seven-footer from Croatia.
From Israel.
Or Israel, yeah.
Same difference.
That's right, yeah. So you can't really play Ben Simmons and Dragan Bender together because they both play a similar spot. So Brandon Ingram might be a better pick for him and for Philly in that case. And I think it's kind of a win-win for Boston. They get a – not season, but, you know, a little bit of a – you guys got some NBA time under his belt in Jahlil Okafor. They know what they're getting instead of a rookie. Boston is only a couple of pieces away, and so I think that'd be an interesting move for them. And then Ben Simmons gets to go to L.A. where he really wants to go. He's made it known that he wants to go to L.A. Yeah. So
it's hard to imagine. I mean, you know, when Philly's in straight-up rebuilding mode. Now, I do think – I think there's one star in the league right now, and it's Ben Simmons. So the problem is
– can't shoot.
Can't shoot. He's not a shooter.
Can't shoot outside of 10 feet.
This is the age of the Golden State Warriors.
Seems like a problem if you're a basketball player.
You're going to see a lot of overdrafted shooters. And that brings us to JC's premature top five NBA lottery picks. So we're going to go five. We're going to go one. Build some tension. Number five, Minnesota Timberwolves. Who are they getting now? We should add, maybe the most exciting young team in the league, the Minnesota T-Wolves, just got a really exciting head coach. They got Tibbs. They got Tom Thibodeau. Sky's the limit. What's the complimentary piece at number five?
Assuming they want to keep Ricky Rubio, which they may or may not, and I think Tibbs is going to want a little tiny bit of age with his youth, I think they might go Chris Dunn. Point guard out of Providence. Played like, all 4 years.
Okay, I like that. Chris Dunn, point guard, Providence. All right, I feel that. Did you have a closing thought there?
Historically, he's graduating senior, so historically guys that play all 4 years tend to do really well and adjust really well in the league. They may not be world beaters, but they adjust really well.
Well, but what about a guy like Buddy Hield?
I think Buddy Hield will go fourth.
All right, and that brings us to the Phoenix Suns, fourth overall. You got Hield.
Yeah, I think I like Buddy Hield in Phoenix. Kind of a more fast-paced offense. I think people liken his shooting ability to Steph Curry, which I think is a little premature. But he's got a quick trigger. He's not afraid in the clutch. Yeah, I think it's a good fit for Phoenix.
And he's a shooter.
Yeah,
he's a shooter who can play, and he's a good leader. You're right. I think he's a pretty damn good player.
Yeah.
Is he an all-star? He could be. You know, you look at him and, could you see him being better than somebody like Mike Conley Jr. in a few years? I absolutely do. Boston Celtics, number three overall. Who you like?
I like Dragan Bender. Assuming they keep the pick, they've got a lot of big guys now. They have a ton of picks this year and next year. But I know the idea of striking lightning in a bottle twice with Kristaps Porzingis and sort of repeating that with Dragan Bender is highly unlikely. But from what I've seen, he's a seven-footer who moves really well. He passes really well. He can actually handle the ball on the open court. I like him. I think he's sort of Kristaps 2.0.
All right, number two, Los Angeles Lakers, and I guess there's no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben Simmons should go one, and so Brandon Ingram would – so this is assuming no trades happen. So Philly would take Ben Simmons one, and so Brandon Ingram would go two to L.A. Brandon Ingram – he's very weird looking. He's 6'10". He's extremely skinny. And he's skinnier than Kevin Durant was when he first got into the league. His arms are longer, which makes him even more unorthodox looking. Fully tattooed, which is weird coming out of Duke. But good defender. Anybody who's that long can't help but be a good defender, good shooter, good active scorer. We'll need some time to adjust, but I think he'll be fine with the Lakers. And then number one,
Ben Simmons. Overall pick,
Ben Simmons proven to be everything we thought he was going to be as far as a rebounder, passer in the open court, and a scorer inside. I don't think anybody anticipated how bad of a shooter he would be outside of 10 feet. But the good thing about it is mechanically, there's nothing in his jump shot that can't be fixed. And so I think he'll end up being fine. I don't think he'll end up being a 3-point shooter, but he can be a decent mid range guy.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, that's a fucking great transition to What do you guys want to do first? Should we go NBA playoffs, save NBA playoffs for the end, or should we do NFL rookies?
Well, let's since we're kind of going back and forth, let's have you go into the NFL rookies.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling it. So basically, all right, the NFL draft came and went. That's great. A lot of exciting players. You saw guys like Jalen Strong. God damn you. You saw guys like Jalen. What the fuck is that dude's name? Jalen Ramsey? Is he Jalen Ramsey or Jalen Strong? The kid from Florida State who was like really Jalen Ramsey. Excuse me, Jalen Ramsey. I don't know who Jalen Strong is. He sounds like a.
It's my cousin from Nebraska.
Yeah, that's your bro. Jalen Ramsey, a player who was drafted in the top five. Some said the best player in the draft. Jacksonville Jaguars player. Tore his meniscus, so that's a bummer. But also, with all respect to Mr. Ramsey, a lot of people just kind of don't. That's not going to affect you personally because we live in the age of fantasy football. So the only thing you really, really care about is who is going to be like really good on your fantasy team, right? And there's a lot of exciting players.
Unless you're in an IDP league, and who does that, really?
You know, I'm in a couple, and I don't hate it, but it's also...
It's my primary league, man. Come on.
Is it really? I can't stand it.
No, man, it's fun to have some good defensive players in there.
I mean, it kind of is what it is.
It adds a sense of chaos to it. So you can't rely on the pundits to necessarily give you all the hints for.
The couple of times I've been in them, I forget to draft them, and then I'm like, oh fuck, I need defensive players now.
And then the guys who don't know what they're doing, like me, come in there and get the best guys.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
All right. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do this is a little premature because we don't know, and this is there's a lot of players that we love. A lot of players that we really like. But again, we're talking fantasy football, which is all about opportunity, which is all about touches, which is all about stats, which is all about are you in an offense that knows what it's doing, which is all about are you playing with fucking Teddy Bridgewater. I'm going to give you some busts that I just don't think are going to be factors year one, even though I love the talent, even though they were high picks. I'm going to start with Sterling Shepard. He was drafted by the New York Giants. I just think there's too many players in New York. I think this team is still kind of figuring out what it wants to be, and the idea that he's going to come in there and be, you know, a second receiver that's going to put up numbers, I just don't see it quite yet. Corey Coleman, a player that I love, but he's going to the Cleveland Browns. I don't care how much I love you in college, you're a Cleveland Brown now, and I'm staying. Corey Coleman's one of those players. I used to edit a fantasy football site called RotoViz that is probably about the best in the business when it comes to analytics and fantasy football. He's their number two dynasty player right now, fantasy rookie. But Corey Coleman, you have to think he is a Cleveland Brown. Until something shows you that the Cleveland Browns know what they're doing or have – and again, it's not even a question of whether or not they're good or they know what they're doing. This is a team that has year-to-year turmoil they need one coach to be there for 3 years, and then they're going to be able to have some kind of identity. But when you're hiring and firing people every year, it's just not going to work.
So super quick, yes or no, just while we're on the Browns, do you think RG3 puts it together and –
No.
No?
Okay. No, yeah. Absolutely not. I mean, like, the problem is it's from the top down. It's kind of like a little bit with the problem with the Cowboys, but I think that it's worse even at the Browns.
Another player I absolutely love in college, and – you know, this was definitely the year of people looking at Ole Miss and thinking, what the fuck is happening at Ole Miss? Unbelievable talent, but corners cut, undercoached, underdeveloped, and you've had players that have had off-the-field issues. Laquon Treadwell, for the most part, has been immune to that. But, again, he went to Minnesota. It's a run-first offense. Adrian Peterson offense. Teddy Bridgewater isn't there yet. Other talent around there. Laquon Treadwell out of Ole Miss. Freakish talent, really, really, probably maybe the second best talented receiver in my opinion, but my God, he's, again, Corey Coleman, Laquon Treadwell, Sterling Shepard, great college receivers, a lot of talent, don't love the situations that they're currently in. So let's talk about players that are going to boom for you. They're going to get you going. I'm going to give you five, but I got a bonus one. This kid named CJ Procise. He is.
You can't even pronounce his name.
I can't even pronounce his name. And that does not bode well, but you will know his name by October. This is the guy who was drafted in the third round of the Seattle Seahawks to be their new starting running back. And that'll be an expectation. That'll be something that might, you know, it's kind of a crowded backfield. They have players there, but you will see him get some touches and get some big touches in the season. It won't be long. In terms of your top five, number five, even though they have DeMarco Murray, I think he's going to be a workhorse for them. Big upright back, could be Eddie George, the new Eddie George in Tennessee, Derrick Henry. Alabama Heisman Trophy winner. I think this kid's a player, and he's going to have a lot of opportunity. Number four, and this is a sleeper and a reach. You certainly don't have to draft him very high. But Baltimore has not had a backfield and a runner that they've been all in on in a good while. They've had some stop gaps like Justin Forsett, but I think a kid who has a chance to be special and a star is this kid who went to Louisiana Tech, impressed at the Senior Bowl, burdened and underdrafted, slipped to the fourth round because of a small school. But he's a dynamic player that can do it all. Reminds me of Ray Rice in terms of catch out of the backfield, durable. You can give him the ball 25 times a game. Good pass catcher, quick, elusive, and that's Kenneth Dixon out of Louisiana Tech. I think he's just a player you gotta get. You gotta go get Kenneth Dixon. Number three, this is very easily the most talented receiver in the draft. It breaks my heart because he's in you know, I'm a Cowboys fan and he's in Washington. Josh Dotson out of TCU. Mm-hmm. This is a bad man. You know, to any Texas fan out there, saw him just abuse 6'5" Texas corner Holton Hill in the red zone. He is a bad man. Number two, and this is a reach, but this is a kid I love. He's faster than DeSean Jackson, and he caught 30 touchdowns his senior year. He's a game-making, big play burner, and that's Will Fuller out of Notre Dame. He's now a Houston Texan. I can't wait to watch him play. I think he's going to be special. And number one, you heard it here first. This is the greatest running back of all time, Ezekiel motherfucking Elliott. A player that has me just so excited to watch football, buy some merch, drink some beers, and chant Zeke.
Have you already gotten your jersey yet?
No, yeah, I will. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the number that they gave him. I think they gave him 21. That's it. Come on. I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. But Zeke Elliott, greatest running back of all time. Look.
I know he got Emma Smith's seal of approval.
He is scientific. If you saw the ESPN Sports Science on him, you saw how scientifically fast he is. So good in that zone spread scheme that the Cowboys run, where you get the ball, you have a chance to make a decision, and he's so quick to the hole. He's durable, cuts. He checks every single box, and he's also going to get the ball 25 times a game. He's going to keep defenses off the field. He's going to eat. The only thing that can stop him is a freakish knee injury. And
I know running backs are so dependent on the offensive line and a lot of other positions, but I know he's had moments in college where it's hard to define a running back as clutch, but you could call him clutch.
He's a big, game-breaking, battering ram of a player. Durable, sturdy, steady.
He is a bad man.
You can give him 25 carries a year for 8 years. Yeah. And that's what the Cowboys signed up for. So he's in line for a really exciting career. Karma could derail. Like, something shitty could happen. But unless, when you're doing fantasy football, you never bet on something bad happening to somebody.
Do you think he tries to defy the NFL and wear a cropped jersey to show off his abs?
Let's hope so. It's he's a beautiful man. He can do whatever he wants. Ezekiel Elliott. I can't wait to watch him play. Welcome to Dallas Cowboys, son. You have a bright future. He's the chosen one.
He's got me kind of excited and seeing what he can do. I've never been the biggest Dallas Cowboys fan, but I...
Now you get to be. The time is now. You're a Hispanic male from Texas. It is your birthright.
It's, yeah, it kind of is supposed to be. And I mean, I don't dislike them. I just kind of, yeah.
Well, now is the time to get yourself a Zeke jersey and just feel it. All right, let's talk NBA playoffs a little bit to close out the show. Down to the finals, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals going on right now. Game two is actually on in the background. Even though it's a pretty good game right now, as of press time, it's 30-28 Cavs. Neither of us are particularly excited about it because the reality is that who gives a fuck? The Cavs are going to win this in 4 or 5, and that's going to be that. I want to talk about the West.
Yeah, the West is an interesting matchup with OKC and Golden State. I know OKC got blown out in game two, but that's kind of sort of their MO. They're either going to get blown out or keep it close, and if they can keep it close, they do some interesting things matchup-wise that – you know, they sort of stumbled into playing their two big men, Enes Kanter and Steven Adams, together versus the Spurs. They hadn't really done that all year. And they discovered how effective the two of them could be together. And a lot of people came in with the expectation, well, you can't go big versus Golden State when they go small.
Yeah.
Well, what people discovered in the first game is when you've got Enes Kanter and Steven Adams in there together versus Golden State's small ball lineup, that means Draymond has to guard one of them. And if he's guarding one of them, that means he's not guarding KD or Russ. And in the first game, Kevin Durant hit the game-sealing shot over Andre Iguodala, Draymond was nowhere to be seen because he was down low with the 2 7-footers. And so I think that's one of the interesting things to pay attention to. Both of the first two games, OKC didn't shoot particularly well, and if they can get back to that, it'll be more of a competitive series.
You know, I think the question is competitive. I think we know it's going to be competitive. I mean, right. I think they went and stole a game, and all of a sudden the series becomes interesting, must-watch TV.
Yeah.
You watch this game, and you see that Steph Curry is capable of winning it on his own in a flurry. And that's a threat that's going to permeate over the whole freaking series. How many games that this is a roundabout way of asking the same old basic question, but we got to know how many games can Oklahoma City win?
I feel like they can win 2 or 3. And I think they could stretch this to 7. If they stretch it to 7, the other fascinating thing about the matchup is Andre Bogut is dealing with an adductor strain, and so that only makes Cantor and Adams more effective if Bogut is less effective. And again, Draymond's got to guard one of them, which means he's not guarding KD or Russ. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the things to look for. And because of that, I think OKC could stretch this to 7. I would still give the edge to Golden State.
And that's the thing, right? If Oklahoma City is going to win this series, they have to do it in 6.
Right.
Because I don't care who you are. In NBA history, you're not going to win a Game 7 on the road.
And that's kind of how I felt versus San Antonio. I even tweeted this, like, going into Game 6, because it felt like OKC stole a couple of games versus San Antonio. If they couldn't do it in 6, they weren't going to do it in 7.
Sure.
And so, yeah, if OKC can't do it in 6, they won't do it in 7.
Yeah, that seems like an impossible task.
Yeah.
So again, I'm going to ask you, 6 or 7 or 5, who you got? What's your final?
I mean, I would probably say Golden State in 6.
I'm going to say Golden State in 5. I think they've figured out the Thunder. I think you're asking too much of the Thunder, and I think barring a Steph Curry injury.
He's not 100%. He's still playing, but he's clearly not fully 100%.
He's not there. But yeah, you know what? And maybe that's bullshit. But I think the Thunder have to go off.
Right.
And you're betting on a best case scenario for two players. And plus, the other thing is that really wonderful run that they went on against the Spurs. When you get hot, you're hot.
And margin of error is one of those things that's impossible to dictate and quantify.
Because you can have an 8-point lead with under 2 minutes to go and lose it in 30 seconds.
Yeah, and so, you know, the OKC has a much slimmer margin of error. And yeah, like I said, it's an impossible thing to quantify. But when the pressure is on them, no matter how many games they win or lose, OKC or Golden State has been in the driver's seat all along, even though they lost game 1.
And LeBron James just had a really beautiful fast break. Let's pivot very quickly to the Cavs-Raptors. Assuming the Cavaliers win tonight, make it 2-0.
Yeah.
By the time you listen to this, you'll know. But what's the point of tuning into the series?
Well, what's great about the way they're attacking this series is the first two series they were shooting a lot of threes, which is not something they'd done. They actually did a good amount of shooting threes during the season. Nobody really paid attention to how much they were doing it, but they were doing it even more in the first two rounds of the playoffs. And so a lot of people sort of expected that since that's what they were doing, that's sort of how they have to win. But they came into the series versus the Raptors being dominant in the paint, which they hadn't really had to do all playoff season. So now that you know that they can win both ways, inside and out, it becomes more of a perplexing question for assuming Golden State if they play them in the finals. And, you know, for as dominant as Golden State was in the finals, people do forget that Cleveland had a ton of injuries and LeBron had to play a ton of minutes. That one of the things that people are noticing this year in the Cavaliers' run to the playoffs as they're fully healthy is LeBron's playing way less minutes. He's putting up way less shots. He's going to be fresher in the finals. If he can do what he did in the finals last year, this year, then I think Cleveland has a very good shot at beating Golden State.
So I'm going to ask you right now that the Believe Land documentary is fresh in our memories, is this the year for Cleveland?
I mean, I think it could be.
I didn't ask if it could be. Of course it could be. They're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Is this the year for Cleveland?
Very betting man, which I am. I mean, I would put my money on Golden State.
I'm going to say this. It's going to be Golden State Cleveland, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to win the NBA title.
Hopefully.
And I believe that. And I'll tell you why. Because it's going to be the inverse of last year, where Steph isn't, where, you know, last year Kyrie goes down game one, Kevin Love isn't there. This year they're healthy.
It is the inverse in that. Like, Cleveland, no matter what, is going to go into the finals very fresh.
Yeah.
Specifically LeBron.
And all season we said, okay, Cleveland is healthy, but they're not good enough.
Right.
And then they started raining threes, and it's, hey, they might make it interesting. But now, what we haven't considered until now is that Cleveland is healthy, Golden State is not.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to take. Mm-hmm. The window's there. The time is now. You know, it's all about getting one for the land. All right. Thank you for tuning in to Inside the Locker.
So, actually, I wanted to introduce a real quick question. I just had a thought about a potential new segment.
You just killed my outro,
hey,
Logan.
Dude, listen.
All right.
Listen.
He's the producer. Let him produce.
Yeah.
I was just curious. I think it would be interesting each episode that we record maybe to potentially list off what are the key matchups in the next week or two that we should be looking forward to. Like, what would you recommend to people? What would you watch if you, hands down, you need to watch this in the next couple of weeks? Do you guys cool with that? Like each week making that kind of recurring things? Like, what's going to be the cool matchup? What's going to be the cool sport? What's going to be something that's going to get something out of, maybe potentially out of their comfort zone?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think that's a nice idea.
I mean, besides the basketball playoffs, like, I don't look too far down the road with the Cubs schedule, but I can tell you anytime Jake Arrieta's on the mound, absolutely.
Must watch TV.
Yeah.
Must watch WGN. Yeah, hey, if you're not watching the Champions League final, you're a bad sports fan. What are you doing? End of the month. I actually can't wait for this one. It's going to be Real Madrid, the halves of soccer, against Atletico Madrid, the best coach team, the best run organization in soccer that has a third of the money.
Is there a good way to watch that?
ESPN?
ESPN should be on there.
Cool.
Do you know the dates on that?
It's Memorial Day weekend, the Saturday.
And I'm sorry, I put you on the spot on that too. So
it's going to be awesome. It's legitimately going to be a fantastic, incredible. I can't wait.
Yeah, but no, it's a good way to close out the show. So.
Yeah, I was also going to say
good producing.
Thank you.
Yeah, but seriously, the Champions League final. More people watch that than the Super Bowl. Whole world. It's just, you know, the best teams in Europe have a tournament, and this year it's an all-Spain final, Atletico Madrid. Probably, you know, to give you an example, in 2006, Real Madrid had its 100-year anniversary, and they had an orchestra, they had Pavarotti, they had this big swanky gala. Atletico Madrid had a paella cookout, and the players lost. They lost their 100th anniversary game. If Atletico Madrid pulls this off, it's going to be, I think, a more impressive feat than Leicester, because it's a city crosstown rivalry thing. It's poor people against rich people. It's a class thing. Atletico Madrid, the Calderon, like one of my favorite teams. They're also a pretty trendy hipster-ass team, like, you know, but whatever. Atletico, Real, it's going to be fucking awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'll definitely check out that. The thing I was going to suggest is the more I watch it, the more I'm becoming a fan. Formula One racing is actually really super interesting right now.
Nice.
This past weekend, I went down to so Austin is the location of the United States Grand Prix, Formula One track. And so I went down to the track to watch the Spanish Grand Prix, because they had it up on the TVs there with a bunch of other racing fans. And it was an amazing race. The top two contenders for the championship right now are both Mercedes drivers, Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton.
Nice.
In the opening turn, the very first turn, they both took each other out of the race.
Wow.
Crashed directly into each other. And because of that, it was this amazing battle between the Red Bull team and the Ferrari team, and ended up... sorry, spoilers if you are interested in watching and haven't seen it before, but young Max Verstappen for Red Bull, on his very first time racing with Red Bull, he's 18 years old, won his very first Grand Prix in Spain. And this kid is an amazing talent. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's aggressive, but also really smart and mature in his own ways of racing. We're recording this on Thursday the 19th. Not this weekend, but next weekend is going to be the Monaco Grand Prix. Monaco is amazing. It's a beautiful city track. if you've seen the Iron Man 2, that's where they shot a lot of the racing scenes.
The Mickey Rourke one, yeah.
Yes, yes.
For my money, the best Marvel movie. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. it's a beautiful track, and it's kind of like one of the most iconic tracks on there. So I definitely recommend watching that. I think that it's going to be a really fun race to watch, particularly with the kind of the new storylines with young Max Verstappen racing with Red Bull and kind of how volatile Mercedes, who have been world beaters for the past couple of months, have been. So definitely worth watching. It's a lot of fun. You can watch it on NBC Sports. And I think it's going to be on NBC proper right there. So.
That was a great pitch.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch that. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Jake Arrieta, Champions League Final, Formula One. Do your homework. We'll be a pop quiz on Monday. And we'll see you soon.